Welcome back, everybody. It's a great Sunday morning. It's the Pro Shop Golf Show. Tim Cusick, Brady Tinker, Courtney Connell right here on ESPN Radio, 103.3 FM. This segment will be a mishmash of what's going on the John Deere Classic this week. The Scottish Open is also across the pond. Some Americans went across to get used to the time change and hopefully grab themselves some weather and get used to playing in the weather. It hasn't happened. The weather's been unbelievable, the Scottish Open. So there are 61s and 63s and 64s flying around. Ricky and Kisner had the gall to shoot a 70 and a 67 and not make the cut.
No.
So Justin Thomas is still up and playing. John Deere Classic, update me a little bit if you would, please, Tim.
John Deere Classic, you've got Cameron Tringali and you've got Andrew Landry tied at the top of the leaderboard, 16 under. Bill Haas, one shot back with Adam Schenck, one shot back. Mm-hmm. And Nick Watney is two back with Dylan Fratelli and Ryan Moore. So, I mean, that's your
Dylan Fratelli, there was an interesting story. One, he played with Jordan on the championship team at Texas.
Yes.
They were actually
South
roommates
African.
For a while. And I think he actually lived maybe at Jordan's house for a few months when he finally got on the tour. Is
he
that right?
He might have. Jordan had about four or five roommates.
But Fratelli had an interesting, and this is, boy, knowing the rules, especially for you kids that are going to go play tournaments. So Jordan Fratelli was doing well.
Dylan
Fratelli was doing well yesterday, and he hit a bad drive, which led to a bad second, which led to him standing in a bunker where he was going to have to shot where he's basically down in the middle, only he's going to have a foot of club. Mm-hmm. So he's in there. He's like, I don't think I'm going to hit this shot. So he's out standing, looking at hitting this shot left-handed. Flip the club around. You see these guys do it. Flip it around, hit it left-handed, or the croquet method,
right,
either way.
Right.
But where he was going to stand on the opposite side of the ball, there's a sprinkler head. Can I get a drop?
Why not?
Yeah.
He can prove he's going to play that shot.
The official came over and said, it's plausible. Seen plenty of you guys hit these crazy-ass shots, and so you're going to do that? Yep, I'm going to do that. All right, I'll give you a drop. So he takes a drop, and the ball rolls to the right down by another sprinkler head. Can I get a drop? He gets another drop. And by the time he's finished, he's into just the first primary cut of rough. So he's
hitting
got a
right
beautiful
handed
lie. Yeah. Flushes it up there on the green, makes a par.
He'll get a lottery ticket.
Those are the rules.
There
now, sometimes I think, you know, some of that I would be like, yeah, well, that's taking advantage. And they will actually say, you've heard them say, you have to take advantage, you know, by the interpretation of the rules out here. It's a hard game. Remember when Tiger moved a boulder that weighed about 600 pounds?
Oh, Ken Venturi. Ken Venturi went off.
Half of his gallery moved it.
Yeah, but it's a loose impediment that
it wasn't
weighs
very
600
loose
pounds. Right. So.
Hey, one tidbit about the John Deere Classic, one of my favorite memories. I was fortunate to know the origin of this whole property. Gentleman Sam Swanson, who partnered with D.A. Wybring. Sam brought the landowner and Tim Fincham and put them in a room and says, here's what we're going to do today, guys. We're going to negotiate a deal where the PGA Tour is going to buy this land. We're going to build a golf course. D.A. Wybring is going to design it, and that's the way it's going to happen. And it did. Mm. And I've just always thought that was one of my favorite stories because Sam was always tenacious, professional, and had a lot of, you know, he would finesse business deals. It was really good stuff. And DA did a great job. The players love playing there. It's a good design golf course.
If you ever hear, all of you out there listening, that DA Wybring is giving a clinic or doing anything, or you get a chance to meet with or hang with DA Wybring, just say yes.
Absolutely.
He's extraordinarily funny, outlandish, well-spoken. He and Peter for years, mm-hmm, Peter Jacobson,
yes,
for years did their, you know, Laurel and Hardy bit about, you know,
yeah,
and they were fantastic. So that's a must-see. If you get a chance to meet local guy, do it. Okay, let's go ahead and get into this conversation about how these kids, if you're a true golfer,
they
then you're still
too
watching golf. They're
yeah
kids. The 3M Classic was won last week by a guy who 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago was an amateur.
Won the NCAA title.
Matthew Wolf won the NCAA title for Oklahoma State University. His teammate at Oklahoma State was Victor Hovland, who, by the way, in his last amateur tournament at the U.S. Open, was the low amateur, breaking Jack Nicklaus's record score of 280, 281, whatever it was. It was friggin' amazing.
Was also the low amateur at the Masters, too.
Yes, right. And then what's the other kid's name?
Colin Morikawa.
That's the one. Okay. And then there's a kid named Joaquin Niemann, who did not go to school, who is from
Spain,
who at 19 last year jumped onto the tour quietly because we didn't make any fanfare about it, and in 8 tournaments had his card.
Well, it's just
these guys are something else. So how is this happening, Courtney?
From my perspective, because there's been so much talent out there for a number of years, everyone's going to continue to do everything they possibly can to improve, become better, and have an advantage. And so today in the modern day area of golf, we have star players, young players, surrounded and insulated with a team. I think it's impressive. I'm going to come back with one little asterisk on that. So you have a fitness coach, a nutrition coach, you have a planner, you have a mental game coach, you have a swing coach, and you have a team that helps you look at your game plan for the year, your schedule, what tournaments you're going to play, what courses fit your eye. And so it's not just you and your caddy anymore. And back in the days of Lee Trevino and Lanny Watkins, and I don't remember which one said it, but I remember interviewing them, and it was a Ryder Cup year, and we were talking about all kinds of things. And back then, some of the players' coach was their wife, and their swing coach was a bottle of vodka or whiskey. You know, it was just a different era, and it's a whole different – and even the kids now in high school are going to these academies that's very good with their education, but it's all-day golf because there's so many out there.
Courtney and Brady, the thing that really impresses me, especially amongst these three guys that we just talked about, Morikawa and Wolf and Hovland, is not the physical part, but it's the mental and emotional part. These guys are in their early 20s, 20, 21 years old, and decades ago, it used to be you got on tour and you got your brains beat in and you had to get to the doorstep 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. Tom Watson, famously, 77 final round, et cetera, et cetera. These guys are figuring out how to close the deal in their first time at the doorstep.
You used to have to lose to win.
It blows me away.
You used to have to lose to win, and it's just not that way anymore.
That they have the emotional and mental capacity to be able to do that at this level.
And one more thing that from my perspective. I stand to be corrected. But I think what really launched this was when Tiger came on the scene because of how he played. He played without fear. And all the people coming behind him, majority of them, play without fear. I remember listening to golf broadcast in the 70s and 80s. And the game that was played was very defensively played. Even the announcers, don't hit it here, it's death here. You know, and they played not to make a mistake, and they played very conservatively whether they're going to take a risk or not. I'm not saying they never did take any risk, but it was a very conservative game plan. Now it's, full throttle.
You might be able to say that Nicklaus took the tour by storm, similar
no
to
question.
What Tiger did.
Yeah, there are different eras, yes.
And Jack, though, probably was the main guy that was on TV all the time that showed kids like us, well, you do play smart. He hit it 40 miles back in the day.
He did play like a chess game on certain venues.
But I asked him once, he said, I've never in 40 years on the tour started a ball off a tee out of bounds or pointed it flying it out of bounds or out of play. Never. Not doing it. Well, now they do it all the time.
Well, we asked
Dustin
him why.
Stands up there and aims at lines you can't even see. Bubba.
Yeah.
Where's he hitting it? Well, I don't know, because he can carry it 317, so it doesn't make any difference.
Well, some of the tracker on television broadcasts can't keep up with some of the shots. I mean, they've improved that. We asked Nicklaus when he was here, why do you play a fade? Well, he grew up on a golf course that was all the trouble was left, and he played, a lot of dogleg rights. And, it's just really interesting.
So if you circle back to this weekend, today specifically, the final round of the John Deere, you've got Colin Morikawa tied for 12th at 12 under par. You've got Matthew Wolf tied for 33rd at 8 under par. You got Victor Hovland tied for 39th at 7 under par. They are still playing tremendous golf, and they're about 6 weeks into some very, very heavy competition.
Really, the truth is, if you sat down and thought about it for a minute, you would say they can't do what they're doing. I mean, because if you're out there listening, you'd have no idea the travel, the details, getting from one tournament to the next. These kids aren't rich. They're not rich. They're not jumping on first-class flights or private airplanes and getting from tournament to tournament. They are going coach, or they are driving. They are sharing hotels with friends. They are figuring out whether they're in, whether they're out, whether they have to Monday qualify. The things that are going on in these guys' minds just to get from one tournament to the next. They asked Hovland, how are you doing and how are you settling in? He goes, I don't know. I'm just getting up every morning and trying to show up where I'm supposed to be. And then,
And you know where he's showing up next week? Royal Portrush.
It's amazing.
Great stuff. It's exciting.
I would say another thing that is a big deal for these guys, beyond the fact that the narrative no longer exists or they don't care about it, that, hey, you need to stand over there in the corner until we tell you it's your turn to win or that you've learned enough. One, social media and these kids' ability to be their own man and to have confidence and to not let anybody stand in their way has aided. While there's plenty of stuff about social media I don't like, the confidence that it gives these kids, you know, if they get out there and they're fun on social media, they get buoyed by whatever, 200,000 people saying, go for it, right on, hey, you're doing great, you're kicking ass, I'll show some videos, we want to know. And the other thing is, all the electronics that are involved. TrackMan, most of you have heard about and you've probably never seen it, but it is the main tool. But there are other tools. These kids are getting out there with their, as you mentioned, right, with their swing coach behind them, with their girlfriend in the corner, with a caddy who's got infinite knowledge, and they've got these machines behind them. And they are pounding golf balls one after another, and then they get a printout. And the printout says, you hit every 6-iron, exactly, 192 yards in the air. You hit 41 of them, 39, you can do it. You hit every drive within 3 degrees, moving it right to left or left to right. And all of a sudden they say, look, this piece of paper says you can do it. Where when you and I started out playing, we thought we could do it. Right. We did it in practice rounds. But could we really do it with money on the line? Could we really do it when we were trying to win a tournament, when we were trying to beat someone we really wanted to beat? And the question marks came into your head. But now they've got empiric knowledge. This is it. You can do it. You are doing it thousands of times over and over and over again. So take it out there.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think Tim will remember we were fortunate to attend a PGA Frisco event talking about the PGA Frisco golf course, everything. Lee Trevino was there. And, you know, Lee, he's old school, and I love him dearly. He made a kind of a crack or comment about all those people being on. Like, you go to the practice rounds or early in the morning, not really the practice rounds, but the practice facility is just lined up with almost an entourage. And he was saying, guys, that's too many people. If you don't have it by the time you're ready to tee it up, you don't have it. And a little bit of that's true. Mm-hmm. That's mostly old school. Well, I don't want to discount what he's saying.
We've all wondered out loud, even a little bit, Courtney and Tim, hey, is the entourage or the support staff too much when it comes to Jordan Spieth?
I don't think it is. I'm just going to go out there and say it. I don't think it is at all. I think it's fantastic. I think it's a well-oiled machine with quality people. I'm fortunate to know them. And I don't think it's – and I would say that anyway just because of the person that Jordan is. He surrounds himself with quality people. So I don't think it's too much at all.
So one of our questions for our guest in the segment coming up, Ron Cyrak, is since the U.S. Open, all the major players, all the big-time players, the highest-ranked players have either taken – time off, haven't played since the U.S. Open.
Tiger hasn't played.
Or have played a little bit, but haven't played great. Mm-hmm. So who shows up? What do you show up with? How are you after you fly across the pond? Are you exhausted? These guys are exhausted. Very wide open for next week in Ireland.
Tiger posted an Instagram video, I believe, and apparently for the last week, he is now in Ireland. So he's
playing right now.
He's on the property. I doubt he's going to play very much. The weather, by the way, is not going to be helpful to him based on what he told us at the U.S. Open, that the cold weather makes it worse for him. He feels every single shot he hits, good or bad, in the back or in the knee or wherever it may be, in the neck. You see all the tape on him, but he's been doing something. He's been getting up for a week.
Yeah,
at 1 a.m. He's been going to sleep at 7 or 8 o'clock, waking up at 1 a.m. and staying awake because 1 a.m. East Coast time in Florida, where he's at, is 6 a.m. at Portrush Golf Course in Ireland. That's preparing. Mm-hmm. That's preparing. If you ain't going over there, sleeping in the hotel and getting used to it, then that's the next best thing. You're getting your body ready for the hours that you were going to play at.
What I found that was interesting with that, I mean, that's you know, very interesting in and of itself. What I found was interesting is I saw something that was posted that kind of gave his regimen for the day. And we know he works out and this and that and putting and chipping. And so at some point he plays 9 holes and then he dedicates 2 hours at the end of his practice to what didn't go right in those 9 holes, and that's what he circles back to before he puts the clubs away for the day.
So when he's finished, everything's clean as far as he's concerned.
One of the things I didn't realize was part of his practice routine that I learned earlier in the year at Augusta is the first thing he does when he goes to the practice facility is he's scoped out all the par 3 yardages. He knows them by heart, and he obviously he gets like the whole location for that day. And he and his caddy, you know, play the par threes as warming up, and he really gets laser focused on the par threes. Then he works on the rest of his game. He sometimes starts out with putting, then does the par three, then the rest of the game, then back to putting.
And the final thing is he hits 4 or 5 balls that are going to be the first tee shot of his round.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's great advice for any of you that are going out there. Go hit some balls, but don't just beat balls. Go ahead, and when you think you're just about warm, grab a driver, grab a three, whatever you're going to do, and hit the first four tee shots of the day. Hit one driver, hit a three iron, or whatever it is you got to hit on the par three, et cetera, picture it in your mind and hit the shot. By the way, these young kids coming in affect other people as well. Matthew Wolf, who won last week, you probably watched. Bryson DeChambeau, SMU kid, was winning, then fell back, and then made a mad charge.
There was so much drama at the end.
That was a great tournament. Made a beautiful eagle. He basically hit three perfect shots.
DeChambeau was 18 under teeing off of the 72nd hole. He hits a great drive.
Perfect.
Everybody's in a phenomenal second shot.
Perfect.
Okay, so you know he's going to make it.
And then you got
the two guys coming behind. They're at 19 under, okay? And they hit phenomenal shots. And I like the camera action. They just got a glimpse of DeChambeau walking, and maybe he was going to go practice or warm up again. And he heard the crowd. He turned around. He goes, did he make it? He said, yeah. He goes, oh.
All right, when we come back, Ron Cyrak is a wonderful and award-winning writer, and he will take us through a whole bunch of this stuff. We're going to throw a bunch of stuff at him. It'll be fun. Then, from the tips in our final segment, why do you hit the ball off the toe? When we come back to the Pro Shop on ESPN Radio, 103.3 FM.